Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Well, I heard Brian say this a lot. Oh my, CPI. The numbers are out, and is it good news? And a big leap for the Dow. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. I'm Joel Krause, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yes, Joel, we'll get to the CPI report, but I think we really have to talk about what was almost the end of civilization.
That's right.
On Tuesday night. So everybody was very nervous on Tuesday night and into Wednesday. And then the market reacted after a ceasefire was announced. And we'll see, you know, you and I talked off air earlier this week and said it's probably pretty fragile that ceasefire continues to go on. But that is really was the big news. And then, of course, we ended on Friday morning with a CPI report that was higher than expected.
That's right. Yeah. So in terms of the ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran, we'll have to see how those talks go. So Vice President J.D. Vance is meeting with one of his counterparts over in Iran. I'm actually kind of curious who's in those leadership positions now, right? Because we do know that part of Operation Epic Fury, it did eliminate a few of the Iranian leaders. And So who is he negotiating with? But big news was the market reaction on Wednesday. You had the Dow, as Joe said, that was a big, big move. We were looking at some of the numbers, and I think it also highlights the importance of trying to not trade some of these geopolitical events. Because if you were out of the market for some reason on Wednesday, well, guess what? You are still in the red. You missed out on that one big day. That was your entire year-to-date return on the Dow. And that's a lot of ground to try to make up.
That's not in a unique situation. No. Usually the performance happens in just a few number of days, and people who try to trade have to be right when to get out and when to get back in. And even in this example, if you wanted to get out Tuesday night because you wanted to avoid that, by Wednesday morning, the move was already made.
Exactly, because it's not as though it happened by the end of the day. It was with the open. The markets can actually move even if they're not open in terms of just the repricing that happens from the close of one day to the open of the next. It's not like a continuous function where it's just the straight line. Oh, I'm just going to catch the upswing. Well, sometimes it makes these big leaps forward. And the ceasefire does seem a little fragile, a little tentative. I think that when we're looking at what the market really told us about it, is that there is a possibility, if not maybe a probability, that the Strait of Hormuz is indeed going to open. Now, does that mean that Iran is going to be able to collect a toll? Does it mean that the United States is going to have a joint partnership with Iran to actually get some of that? Or is it going to be the free flow? We'll have to see. But so far, we have seen a number of vessels actually traverse that strait. It's not, I think, the flow that President Trump really wants. It's not what the markets really want. But it's at least a step in the right direction.
And we talk about these things not only because we have any influence on what happens in geopolitical concern, but we do have influence in how we manage portfolios.
Yes.
And one of the things that we did see this past week, ending on an inflation report that was higher than expected, but that consumer sentiment continues to deteriorate.
Yeah, consumer sentiment is a very fickle thing. It is oftentimes driven by the price of gasoline. Some of the key drivers of consumer sentiment are the availability of jobs and then also the price of gasoline. It's always in your face what the price of gasoline is. And with the CPI number, consumer price index for the month of March, it was the largest month-over-month increase in gasoline prices that I have seen. It was a 21% jump. And that drove headline inflation to 3.3% year over year. But when we look at core, the part of it that excludes food and energy, because, you know, you get a big increase in energy prices, but if they stop going up, stay where they are, or if they go back down, then all of a sudden that can be a drag on the headline. So if we look at the core, that was actually somewhat calm. It was about 2.6%. The outstanding question, of course, is if we do have higher gasoline, diesel prices, at these levels, at what point does it begin to seep into that core? Because everything that you buy that is delivered to your home, whether you deliver it yourself or if it's delivered by, you know, an online merchant.
Makeup, golf balls, tires, all of those are affected by that.
All the diesel prices that go into it. And so the longer that we stay at these high levels, the more likely we see that seeping into the core inflation, which then makes the Fed's job a lot harder. Because, you know, we did get a decent March payrolls number a couple of weeks ago, but there are some tentative signs about, you know, is the job creation, is it really as broad-based as what we would like to see? So that's one part of their mandate. Then you have the inflation part. So if they're kind of moving away from both of their goals, what do they do in order to try to get things back on track?
All right, we got all the negativity out of the way, and here comes the positive news. Stunning GDP numbers are projected, and growth numbers are even higher than what we saw earlier in the year.
Yeah, isn't that kind of incredible how it is that despite the high energy prices, that GDP forecasts from places like the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, International Monetary Fund, they're still showing very good growth for the U.S. economy. And I think that deserves a little unpacking. If you think about what it takes to generate economic activity in the United States, it's not as energy intensive as it used to be. I think we have this kind of almost like anchoring to how things were in the 70s and 80s, where high oil prices were a real Debbie Downer for the economy. And obviously, we don't like seeing it in terms of coming out of our budgets. But for the economy as a whole, you know, we're a net exporter of oil. So it benefits the energy companies. So that can be a benefit there. Plus, we're not as energy intensive as in the past. There's still expectations of the build out associated with artificial intelligence, and not just artificial intelligence. I mean, it's a build out of upgrading the infrastructure, the power grid, upgrading equipment, thanks to the tax incentives in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. You know, manufacturers, even if they're not even related to AI, the build out there, they have a tax incentive now to improve their productivity. So that's a lot of, I think, what's driving some of the continued optimism from forecasters.
In the way I want to kind of wrap that up, by the way, the forecasters, you know, FactSet has almost a 14% growth rate, which is stunning. And so the market generally follows that.
Yeah.
And so I want people to look ahead, because the market is kind of tracking almost right on top of what a midterm election year looks like. And so there's nothing different about it where we have a pullback. Mm-hmm. More importantly, if you can look down the road, and the market will do that when it starts looking to double-digit growth, it should follow.
And click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com. Not just the button on our website. You can see all of the things we do, our services we provide, and how we can help you stay up to date with your portfolio with guidance to keep it optimized, especially if recent headlines are giving you some uncertainty. It's a whole team in-house who has your best interest in mind on your side at Annex. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. As you start preparing or are looking at over your finished Wisconsin state tax return, you might notice that your tax liability looks a little different than prior years. The new Wisconsin retirement income subtraction could be the reason, and in 2025, Wisconsin passed legislation that added a new subtraction for state retirement income, and it could be generous for some people. And Arabella Perrins is a financial planning specialist at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for being on the show again, Arabella.
Thank you.
What does this mean? Because you've seen a lot of this already for Wisconsin taxpayers. What age does it start to matter for most people?
So officially starting in 2025, Wisconsin residents who are age 67 and older, they can now subtract up to $24,000 of qualifying retirement income from their state taxable income. So this is on a per spouse basis, so up to $48,000 total for some households in which both spouses are over that age of 67. And really, this benefits retirees through a reduction in their taxable income. And it's funny because this is the first time a lot of people have heard of this subtraction. So up to $48,000 for two spouses. And this applies for even high earners. There is no income limitation this time. So it's really helping us be more generous to those retirees who are living on retirement income.
We like that word, generous. Now, what about qualifying retirement income? What kind of income counts for this subtraction?
So these are your typical qualified retirement plans like 401ks, IRAs, and pensions. As long as your retirement income is taxable in the state of Wisconsin, it can count. So I want to note possibly the most common instance in which something doesn't count. It's your Social Security income, because that is not taxable in the state of Wisconsin. So your Social Security income does not count towards this retirement income subtraction. However, all of your IRAs, 401ks, pensions, other retirement income does count here. So I want to walk us through an example here. So we have Robert and Mary Johnson, very classic Wisconsonite names.
Somebody
here,
might be listening saying, hey, that's me. No, this is just an example.
Yeah. So Robert and Mary, because they are both over the age of 67, they're 68 in this example, and they're taking over $24,000 of IRA distributions. They're taking $30,000 in this example. They will be able to qualify for that full $48,000 subtraction. So it functions similarly to a deduction on your federal side. The subtraction just means that your income that is taxable is lowered by that amount. They would be able to save a pretty decent amount on their taxes, their ultimate taxable income, by having their total income lowered by that $48,000.
And if people are doing the math in their head, do both spouses need at least $24,000 of income each to qualify?
So the answer here is no. Going back to our example of Robert and Mary Johnson, Robert takes $50,000 of IRA distributions this time. Mary takes none. In this instance, they would actually still qualify for that full $48,000 of the Wisconsin retirement income subtraction, just because they have at least $48,000 total within their household, and both spouses still qualify age-wise. So if Mary didn't qualify age-wise, it would just be Robert who could take that $24,000. But as long as they're both age and at least somebody has that enough income to qualify for the full amount, any amount of income that they have would be able to then qualify for that.
This is key for Wisconsin taxpayers. Do you think a lot of people are missing this?
So it's something that can be really easy to miss if you're not aware of it, you're not watching out for it. It's kind of hidden within your Schedule SB on your tax, your Wisconsin tax return. It's important to really look over, make sure that if you have retirement income, considering whether or not you might be qualifying for it. Are you over age 67? Do you have this? Mm-hmm. And there is another big consideration here that I want to bring up. There's a caveat in that claiming this subtraction makes you ineligible to take a number of Wisconsin credits. So this would include your school property tax credit, the married couples credit, and possibly a big one is that itemized deduction credit. It's really an either or, and you're weighing the benefits of, do I take the subtraction, which means you have less taxable income that you're calculating the tax on, or are you taking the credits, which is a dollar for dollar reduction of the tax that you owe?
Maybe you could start planning for next year.
Right, of course. So once we found out that this new legislation was passing, and once it had passed, you know, really doing that planning, because it does lower your taxable income. And so it can be helpful to plan ahead, and maybe you need less estimated payments. Maybe you need to withhold less because there is less of a tax liability as a result of this deduction that you may not have had in the past. So really here at Annex, when we're looking at and planning around our clients' tax returns, we're really looking and calculating and projecting out, you know, how much of this deduction would they qualify for, as well as, you know, what credits are we projecting them to be eligible for, which is higher, and really giving recommendations for the amounts that they should pay, the amounts that they potentially could owe. So that's really the importance of tax planning and the value that that can be provided. And so you want to make sure that you're thinking about that ahead of time, because, you know, you don't always want a very large refund, even though it might feel nice at the time.
Arabella Perrins, financial planning specialist at Annex Wealth Management, thank you so much for reminding us to look out for that on our taxes.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk The Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, we've had several in-person events at multiple locations this month, so thank you if you've joined us already. If not, a couple of good ones still coming up. Everything from our Women in Wealth events on what you need to know about divorce to getting ahead of memory changes and what families should know. And click events at the top of the page at annexwealth.com. That will set up your reminder. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. He has his own event coming up later this month, The Fed and the Markets. Always very popular, and an eye on the Fed because we kind of thought there was going to be a new chair next month, but that might not be happening. And when that happens, or if, that happens, how might that affect things and what should people be keeping an eye on?
That's right. Yeah. So it's been this interesting drama about Federal Reserve Chair Powell. His term as chair is technically supposed to be up at the end of May. And so as a result, President Trump has nominated Kevin Warsh to fill that role. But Senator Tillis of the Senate Banking Committee has said, no, he doesn't necessarily want to hold the hearing until the investigation into Powell and with his testimony before Congress. Was there a crime committed or anything else? Right. So it's this interesting drama. He said, hey, I'm not going to allow any of these hearings to take place because they did have it on the calendar for this upcoming week, but they removed it. So we don't know exactly when they will hold these nomination hearings. I think that once the hearings are held, it'll be pretty quick to confirm him because he's not, in my opinion, that controversial of a guy. It's more the circumstances around it that's kind of controversial. This past week, we did get the Fed minutes from their last meeting, and there's a lot of divisions on the Fed. There are a few rather outspoken individuals who are saying, hey, with high oil prices, inflation expectations rising, maybe we should consider hiking rates. They are a vocal minority, and I think that's a really key thing to remember, is that it is majority rule in terms of the committee, the voting members of the committee. It's the majority of them, and most of them still do think it's going to be appropriate to cut rates at some time. It's just they've put a little pause on it right now in terms of let's wait to see how things shake out with gasoline prices, oil prices, Strait of Hormuz, and all that other stuff.
And if people don't remember, when did Chair Powell take over and how did that affect things when he did?
Yeah, it was an interesting transition. So it was during President Trump's first term, right? So it was about 2017. Chair Powell, he took the helm from Janet Yellen, who she was the chair of the Federal Reserve at that point. And President Trump really nominated him because thought that he would be a bit of a technocrat in terms of, right, he's a trained lawyer, he's been in the government a long time, he'd do a good job of herding the cats, so to speak. And they suddenly had a fallout because realized that Chair Powell, he wasn't going to just cut rates all the time, right? That he was going to try to be consensus builder and listen to the evidence. And that is one of the things that I think has really soured the relationship between them, is that President Trump didn't have the ear of Chair Powell as much as what he thought he was going to.
April 29th, Fed in the markets, right?
That's right. They're probably not going to do anything, but it'll be interesting to get their assessment of maybe where they think things are going to go in future months.
Click events at annexwealth.com. And another reminder, because these events are always very popular, especially at our Brookfield headquarters, Women in Wealth Live, What Women Need to Know About Divorce, April 18th. That's coming up pretty soon, 8 to noon. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. The Learning Center at AnnexWealth.com has some great downloads right now. 7 retirement planning mistakes you make in your 50s. The tax return review guide we've talked about. If you've already filed your taxes, now what? Plus, our new Women in Wealth page is up at AnnexWealth.com, including the new Women in Wealth podcast with special guests and strategies to empower women and gain greater confidence. There is a great segment this week on that show with Wendy Cousins from Make-A-Wish and Ann Ohm. She tells us the steps she took to becoming a successful entrepreneur. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. We're watching tariffs. We're watching earnings. Where do we want to start?
That's right. Well, I think one of the things that was overlooked this past week, just because of everybody being focused on Iran, was that we did get a few announcements related to tariffs. So maybe let's start there. President Trump, he did announce that they did some Section 232 investigation. investigations. Just a way in which, under the law, the president can do investigations of specific like industries and products. That's the Section 232. Then there can be Section 301 tariffs, which are for specific countries. Okay, so what happened this past week is they had wrapped up some of the investigations, especially as it relates to pharmaceuticals. And that was rather interesting because he announced basically 100% tariffs on name brand pharmaceuticals. So not generics.
We all want generics.
Yeah, we all kind of want the generics, you know, just a lower price and that. But sometimes you can't get them. And also some people, they might react to some of the fillers and other things that are added to the generics that differentiate them from the name brand, right? So some people are stuck having to use the name brand ones. But there's, of course, some carve outs in there as far as it's 100%. That's like the headline. But if the companies are committed, and we don't really know what that means, but if they're committed to building facilities here in the United States, then they might be exempted. There's also some carve-outs based on relationships with other countries like the United Kingdom and the such. So the headline tariff, 100%, that was a pretty big number. But when you get into the details, it's like, maybe it's not going to be as bad of an effect as what we were originally thinking.
So if you're in that line of work or you have that company, you want to build in the U.S. or that's the goal?
That is what President Trump is trying to do, right? Hold out the carrot and use a stick to try to get the manufacturing here in the United States. Same thing applied to other tariffs related to steel and aluminum. There was some confusion with the original tariffs that were imposed as to, is it anything with even just a little bit of steel or aluminum, or does it have to be entirely of it?
So there, it could be a really small amount.
It could be. And so there are some clarifications that came out to kind of, soften the edges of that tariff.
And as we head into earnings season, what are we looking at?
Yeah, next week, when I think of the official start, it's when the big banks start to report. We've already had a few companies from the Standard & Poor's 500, S&P 500, where they've announced some of their earnings, but it's really going to start picking up and accelerate over the next few weeks. According to FactSet estimates, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, is that the estimate is for about 14% year-over-year increase in earnings per share, supported by roughly 9 to 10% revenue growth. So if you think about the revenue, right, that's sometimes called the top line, mm-hmm. but then the part as far as the after you strip out all the expenses, the earnings are expected to grow at about 14%. That's a pretty healthy clip, despite all of the chaos that's going on in the world. I'm really going to be interested to hear about some of the more consumer-facing companies as to what's happening. Because with high gasoline prices, right, what's the narrative that they're going to give us, some of the projections around the pinch that consumers are feeling and how they're adapting to high gasoline prices.
It's that trickle-down effect affecting a lot of other things. Are you happy with your portfolio? Are you tired of doing it alone? Is it getting difficult to manage strategies as your business grows? Click that Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Talking about donor advised funds, they're getting a lot of attention, or they have been, and maybe moving forward, they are flexible, tax smart, and can make a big difference in how you plan for your giving. So today we're going to break down what donor advised funds actually are, why they might matter to you, and how they might fit into your portfolio strategy. And to help us do that, wealth manager Greg Vidmar, he's well versed on this topic. He's seen it with people's portfolios. Hey, Greg.
Hi, Joe. Yes, we've seen it a lot, you know, especially over the past couple of years. It's just gaining more and more popularity. So really, what are donor advised funds? And they're more commonly referred to as DAFs. In the personal finance industry, we like to look at buckets. You have your buckets for short-term investing or long-term investing, retirement, maybe buying a new house, but you also have different buckets for your spending. And if you use them correctly, there are massive benefits, often tied to tax. So like with 529s, those are for education savings, but you have to use it for education savings. You have health savings accounts or HSAs, you know, another one there, Joe, but you have to use it for medical expenses, approved medical expenses. So we have another bucket, but for charitable giving called the donor advised fund. Ideally, we create this separate account to use for charitable giving into the future. And you can make gifts to them, but it's very important, is that they're irrevocable. So they're designed for charitable giving. And there's not a lot of flexibility that once you put it in there, you can't then say, oh, I changed my mind, I want to use it for a vacation. Be very intentional and be very informed before making this contribution.
And you probably get a lot of questions from people going to certain, what they think are charity events. If you're getting something in return, that doesn't qualify.
Yes. When you look at these donor advised funds and when you create the separate account and you use it to then give grants in the future, you can't expect anything in return. It's purely a cash donation. Now, you can give some direction on how you want the charities to use it. Mm-hmm. If it's a specific tithe, a specific project, you can give that indication, but you can't use it for a golf outing, a foundation,
auctions,
things like that.
And let's talk about the different ways to fund it. You talked about the buckets. We had a segment previously on a radio show where we talked about unused 529s, and you brought up 529s. If that goes unused, can you transfer that into a donor advised fund?
Not the 529. So the way that you look at the donor advised fund and funding it, I'd say the most attractive way to use it is to use highly appreciated long-term stock. So if you invested in stock several years ago and it's now appreciated and become 10, 20, I've even seen 100% of someone's portfolio in one business, one company stock, which brings a lot of risk. And, you know, as a fiduciary, we want to be a little bit more diversified than that. So one way that to reduce that exposure without paying the capital gains tax on that is you can move some shares from your personal investments into this donor advised fund. And as long as you do that in kind and don't sell it, is you can then sell it in the donor advised fund. Since it's a charitable account, there's no taxes owed to you, to the charities, to anyone, because it's irrevocable and it's specific for charity.
It probably feels a little bit better to do that with an appreciated stock than with just cash. However, you can fund it with cash.
Yeah, you can fund it with cash. And there's been some scenarios for clients where it has made sense, because cash, you can get a larger deduction up to 60% of your adjusted income, whereas stocks, it's only 30% of your income. Mm. So you definitely have to understand the differences between the two. But I'd say for most people, 30% of your income is within range of what we're trying to achieve. But if you do have a low income year, like in retirement, you definitely have to understand the pros and cons of each. But I'd say for most people, donating stock is the better benefit, because it's two birds, one stone situation. You're reducing your exposure to one business, you're not paying the taxes, and you're creating this bucket for your charitable giving moving forward. Because not only with this, but other concepts I talk with clients, is that you got to look at the taxability of those different buckets. If you have cash at the bank, you've already paid taxes on that. So why give that to charities when you can give other assets like appreciated stock that you haven't yet paid taxes on? Let's target those for giving to charities versus the cash on hand. Now, the cash on hand might be a little bit easier because you can just write out a check give the cash. Being a little bit more strategic in nature, you know, that's what we're trying to help clients do.
If somebody's listening and saying, I'm ready to do this, what are a couple of key things they should keep in mind before getting started?
Yeah. So overall, reviewing kind of in summary, what are some of the benefits and things for people to consider is, you know, number one is kind of the tax timing. So you can bunch several years of gifting. And typically I advise clients to look at about 5 to 10 years. Doing this strategy, doing $1,000 or $2,000 isn't really going to be worth the squeeze of creating the account. So you want to look at like 5 to 10 years of what your annual gifting is. So if you give $5,000 a year to charity, maybe you look at about $50,000 of the contribution and bunching all of that tax deduction in this year, because the standard deduction is quite high. It's about $32,000 this year for a married filing jointly return. So you want to make sure you do enough to go above that standard deduction and get that tax benefit this year. So that's a real big benefit. And then you can spread that over multiple years. So that's where some clients are like, well, I want the tax deduction, but I don't want the charity to get it this year. But you can do that over several years and on your own timeline.
One of the many strategies we'd be happy to discuss with you here at Annex Wealth Management. He is wealth manager Greg Vidmar. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Go to annexwealth.com, click that Get Started button.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk. the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Glad you're here with us on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This is also, of course, a podcast on demand, so you can get this episode right at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, along with our other podcasts. The Annex LinkedIn page and YouTube pages have the latest financial trends as well, strategies that could apply to you, and the events we have coming up. A lot of them, still a busy April ahead for the next couple of weeks. The Axiom, that is our newsletter with our week in review video from this show, this episode, in your email on Sunday mornings. Just search Annex Axiom, and our other podcasts like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America, some people you might know on that one, and the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with the new episode first thing with that Monday mornings, and our brand new Women in Wealth podcast featuring special guests to help empower women of all ages through genuine conversations. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Folks, try to find Women in Wealth. It is fantastic new podcast that we have out there. Really great guests. I'm really proud that we're putting that on. You know, this is the time of the year that people have to start writing checks to the federal government if they owe taxes. Mm-hmm. And I did get mine this week, and it was a number that had to be paid. But, you know, we talked a little bit about federal income taxes, and that there is a percentage of people in the United States that do not pay federal income tax, mm-hmm. about 30%.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a lot of the data really plays this out over time in terms of who's actually paying the taxes. Now, there's all sorts of different types, right? The level of government, because if you live in like New York City, there's an income tax at the city level. You have a state income tax, and then you have the federal income tax. And then you also have, you know, sales taxes, property taxes.
And you wonder why people are leaving New York for Florida and other places, right? They're getting taxed. I mean, this is a real thing. In fact, there was a report this week, Joe, I don't know if you saw it, but people where they're leaving, what state they're leaving, and where they're going to, and they're leaving high tax states.
Yeah, my in-laws, I mean, they're snowbirds. Mm. They spend most of their time in Maine, but they're residents of Florida. So you can have some of those strategies.
Yeah. Oh, very true. And it's fascinating how some people do. You have to keep track of where you are, right? So probably the flight records, the tickets, just to document where were you actually a resident in terms of the most of your time that you spent, because otherwise each state might want to try to tax you on that exact same income.
They have enough time. They're retired.
They have enough time to do that paperwork, right? But yeah, when we look at the actual numbers in terms of who pays it, there's some of the misperceptions. I think they're misperceptions about the percentage of people that are paying the percentage of the income taxes. And a lot of it is coming from the higher net worth, higher income individuals. Obviously, a lot depends upon, are you earning the income through a wage, or is it from like rental income? Is it through capital gains? So all these little details that go into it. But this is the time of year in which people are writing those checks. What we have also seen, the run rate for refunds is about 14% above where it was last year.
Which is good. That means there'll be money in people's pockets, and hopefully that'll be a punch in the arm for the economy. So that is a good thing. But more importantly, when we're talking about this, it is because we do tax planning throughout the year. It isn't the time that you have to write the check or the time that you have to file. It is a year-long process.
And that's exactly it. A lot of people think about this is tax season. Well, no, every season is tax season, really, when it comes to planning. When it comes to tax preparation, right, that occurs at only certain times. But when you are actually doing the planning, that is an ongoing process. It's not just a once and done. Anytime there's a change in the tax code, a change in your life situation, it really does merit coming in and trying to find out, how does this affect me? Because really, when you think about your investments, people oftentimes look at what happened to the S&P 500. It was up. It was down a certain percentage. But then you have to think, okay, is any of that taxable? Is it in a taxable account? Is it in a tax-deferred account, one that I've already paid taxes on? Right? All these complications, because what we're concerned about from a planning perspective is, what do you actually get to keep?
That's right. You know, what do you fold up and keep in your pocket is the most important piece. And there are a lot of things that we do throughout the year to reduce and mitigate the tax bite.
Yes. And some of those things, it's an ongoing process. A technique is oftentimes referred to as tax loss harvesting. You can think of that as being where, when the market gives you lemons, try to make lemonade, right? Is there a way for you to upgrade your portfolio to position as you go through it, recognize some losses to maybe then offset some of the gains to whittle down some concentrated stock positions that you might have. Or if you have a number of investments over the years that you want to diversify a little differently because of how life has changed, is there a way to do that in a tax smart way?
And the tax smart way could be where they're held. So maybe the investments are still held, but where they are held is really important.
Very true. In terms of the different types of accounts. And I love that we have that framework. It's very robust about think about the bucket that it's in, right? Is this in your taxable bucket? Maybe that's a brokerage account, right? It's going to be likely subject to all of your normal taxes. That's where you might not necessarily want to put things like, let's say, just in certain situations, corporate bonds versus municipal bonds. So you might want to think about, with your tax situation, municipal bonds, if it's not taxable at the federal level, maybe that's going to have a better return than if you do a corporate bond that's taxable at the federal and the state level. Then think about the 401k accounts, the IRAs, the Roth IRAs. Those all have different tax characteristics. And so trying to match your asset location, marry it with that asset location, is a key thing that we try to do from a planning perspective.
That's exactly right. And this sounds complicated. It sometimes is,
but
that's the reason why we have the team of experts, tax planners on staff, estate planning lawyers on staff, folks like you on staff to talk about investment performance and putting portfolios together. That is really what full-scale wealth management is, and you get that as a fee-only fiduciary, and that is not what everybody can say.
Yeah, oftentimes what you're going to find is that if you go to somebody who holds themselves out as a financial advisor, financial planner, maybe it's just they're doing the investment side, but we want to marry the tax planning, the retirement planning, the estate planning with the portfolio. We want the portfolio to support the plan.
And we have that tax planning guide, part of our download center at annexwealth.com, along with some other downloads that could help guide yourself through a portfolio, along with folks at Annex here. Another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast is ready right now on the radio station website, or just search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Krause. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.